WNYC Studios is supported by the Brennan Center for Justice, presenting The Failed Experiment of Mass Incarceration. This virtual event on Wednesday, April 17th at 3 p.m. will feature criminal justice advocates and contributors to the new book, Excessive Punishment: How the Justice System Creates Mass Incarceration. They will discuss why the American approach to criminal justice is so punitive and how reforms would prioritize human dignity and restoration over retribution. Find more information and register for this event at brennancenter.org/events.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
The subject of our next segment on the Brian Lehrer Show is a little film series that has remained somewhat close to the hearts of Americans for nearly 40 years, and there's a pretty good chance it came up in conversation at your dinner table over the holiday weekend as it was breaking box office records. Obviously, we're talking about Star Wars, and the question we're asking is, does this sci-fi super franchise matter as much as it did in 1977? And beyond that, why Star Wars matters so much to America? This is kind of big think on many people's favorite pop culture franchise. 212-433-WNYC if you want to take a shot at answering that question. Why does Star Wars matter? Is it profound or is it just really entertaining? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And to help us answer the question is Kevin Marr, writer, comedian, and host of Kevin Geeks Out, a film variety show at Nighthawk Cinemas in Williamsburg. Hey, Kevin, thanks for coming on.
Hi, it's an honor. Thanks so much for having me.
I see you brought all three generations of your family to see the new Star Wars on Christmas Day. You want to tell us about that experience? No spoilers.
Well, no spoilers at all. I can guarantee no spoilers. I was going to be visiting my parents for the holidays, so I thought, I'll wait a couple of days before I see the new movie, see it with my parents, see it with my kids. My wife came along because she's a good sport and she likes some of the actors. I think it's something that Americans have in common. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head that this is a very uniquely American experience of creating this new kind of mythology that Americans buy into. And I think it's a great question about who, you know, not just does it matter more than ever, but who does it matter to and why?
Well, it's not just American mythology. It's kind of universal, right? Or I'm going to read a quote here of George Lucas speaking to Bill Moyers in 1998. He said his films deal with the fact that we all have good and evil inside of us and we can choose which way we want the balance to go, and that he consciously set about to recreate myths and the classic mythological motifs. So that's much more lofty than let's make a fun action flick.
It is, but I think it's coming at a time when Star Wars came out in 1977. It was that George Lucas had made American Graffiti. He'd made a nostalgia movie about, you know, pre-Vietnam and hot rods and tooling up and down the main drag. Star Wars coming out in 1977 was the first kind of war movie to come out post-Vietnam since in 1968, John Wayne had made The Green Berets, which was a disaster of a movie. The American movie-going public couldn't buy into a romanticized war picture. And by kind of tapping into the nostalgia of a Flash Gordon-style space opera, it looked to this sort of simplicity of good versus evil. Whereas so many new American cinema films of the 1970s were kind of looking at the moral ambiguity happening in America, this had a very nostalgic look at good versus evil, harkening back to World War II, which is why you see so much Nazi imagery in The Empire. And that's not a spoiler at all.
Huh. Matt on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Brian. How you doing?
Good. What are you thinking?
Well, I enjoyed seeing the film for these nostalgic reasons, but then as an adult at this point, and understanding the political culture and the militaristic culture we've been in since World War II, I'm disappointed that Hollywood films continue to only suggest that there is this good versus evil, and there's not a way, perhaps, of peace to be the mode of life in the galaxy. It's we're at endless war, And I'm disturbed that children that are seeing this film are going to continue to only understand life in society under this kind of structure.
Kevin, you want to engage Matt here?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think part of the reason it resonates so well, and I'm by no means just, you know, going to be rose-tinted about my understanding of Star Wars. I'm taking my kids to see it. I'm very worried about what their takeaway is. But I think the part of the reason it works so effectively is it's decidedly a movie that takes place far away in the past. So it's not coming out. The wars taking place in this movie are not a consequence of American action abroad. It is completely separate. It takes place in the past.
That's a cop out to say that it's from the past. I mean, it's very clear that American.
Let me finish.
Okay.
But then I think the other thing that it has going on is that it's very much working on a Freudian level and Joseph Campbell power of myth, that you've got the individual. And again, this is why it's, to me, very American. It's all about the individual and the good and the bad that exist in the individual. And that a character like Luke Skywalker can look to his father, who's evil. He doesn't want to kill him. He wants to turn him around. He wants to embrace him. That Luke Skywalker doesn't want to destroy and kill his father. He wants to bring him back to the Anakin Skywalker that he was. So on a person-to-person conflict, it's not about using war and killing and becoming a hero through murder. It's that he wants to save someone, which arguably is even more sinister.
Matt, one more shot.
That's fair enough, that person to person. But I think, again, the nuance is probably lost on children in that.
Matt.
I can't speak for children.
Matt, thank you very much. Finally, an adult who admits he can't speak for children. Carol in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Actually, first I want to correct something that was just said a moment ago. Joseph Campbell did not base his work on Freud. Actually, it was much more Jungian and having to do with archetypes.
You're correct. Yes. You are very correct.
And so, speaking of archetypes, one of the things that Joseph Campbell noticed as he was he was coming to understand the hero of a thousand faces and this myth that was all across this hero myth that was all across cultures in unrelated in the world, is that there are very many similarities. Except that he was critical of the Western, because you're saying that Star Wars is very American and blah, blah, blah. And yes, there is an aspect of individualism and that aspect of the hero. However, in Western culture, there is a personal, there is a singular God who is the opaque source of all. You know, then Joseph Campbell used to say that he would say, I am it, God is it. Well, this is not consistent with what George Lucas is trying to bring forward by bringing the Force into the American consciousness. So he's actually taking a piece of Eastern culture, bringing it into American consciousness through this notion of the Force, which has to do with a transpersonal, a transparent sense of divinity that is in everyone. So the Eastern deities are not singular deities. What they are concentrations of these strong forces.
And you find that in Lucas's concept of the Force.
I'm sorry?
And you find that in the Star Wars concept of the Force, different than a Western God concept.
Correct, that he was trying to bring these Eastern notions into an American culture that actually was hungry for them, which, if we're going to take the notion of America at its deepest sense of inclusiveness, is then very American. So there you go. We get to come full into a full Ouroboric circle.
Well, I love it, Carol. From the individualism to the inclusiveness and through Eastern religion to get to Star Wars is very American. Anything you want to add to that, Kevin?
No, I love it. I think that's a really good point. And It's I think part of, you know, it's really hard to unpack what makes Star Wars works and why it appeals to people in 1970s movie theaters and today is that George Lucas really masterfully drew from so many different sources and it appealed to people on completely different levels, whether they were aware of it or not. And I think it's true. Yeah, he really drew upon the Eastern religious ideas kind of beautifully. Very effectively.
Christine in Hillsdale, you're on WNYC. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I wanted to say, first of all, the reason my main idea about why it's an American obsession is because film is one of our greatest exports. I mean, we have music, we have blue jeans, we have film. Film is one of our greatest exports as a nation, and it gives us something incredibly concrete to point to. I also wanted to point to the gentleman a couple of comments ago who had said that he was disturbed by the idea of people being either good or evil, and how the Star Wars franchise is a representation of that very mm-hmm. literal and very concrete separation of those ideas. But if you take the idea of Darth Vader, and I think a lot of the times we look at just, you know, Luke Skywalker as the protagonist, but if you kind of flip your idea and you think about Darth Vader as more of this tragic hero, and you take him through that tragic hero journey, if you put him up to the monomyth and you put him up to the structure, he is the most beautiful tragic hero. And I know it sounds really repetitive, but he really is this beautiful example of somebody who has this incredible hamartia, and who is his undoing, and it's only at the time of his death that he actually becomes sympathetic. But then when you go back, and after you realize that is his tragic end, you go back and you watch the series all over again, you have this aching feeling for him all throughout as the young Anakin, and as he grows up and as he turns dark. And there's nothing in us, and it's one of those there but for the grace of God go I moments where you can see that happening.
Wow. And you teach English literature. I understand. Do you teach Star Wars in your classes, or this kind of take on it at all?
I actually do, yeah. I mean, how else are you going to get 12th graders to, you know, sit there and attend at 8 o'clock in the morning, except you throw on a little montage of some Star Wars with some soaring music, and you've got a class.
There you go. Everybody should be in your English class, and maybe they will learn something more from the movie and then more from the books they read as a result. Christine, thank you for chiming in. Well, Kevin, we've got a minute left. Let me just remind everybody that my guest does the series. Kevin Maher, M-A-H-E-R, spelled like Bill Maher. Do you say it the same way?
It's pronounced the same way, yes.
And you do Kevin Geeks Out, a film variety show at Nighthawk Cinemas in Williamsburg, and you have one coming up in January, right?
As a matter of fact, our January show is about space operas on January 28th, so we'll be addressing the movies that influenced Star Wars, the movies that ripped off Star Wars, the movies that tried to become the next Star Wars.
How do you define the genre? I guess even it's, without music or, you know, singing in the operatic sense, you consider Star Wars a space opera.
In the sense that it's, you know, a melodramatic kind of soap opera set in space where it's got, you know, high melodrama. It's not hard science fiction. I think part of the reason Star Wars is so appealing is that everything, if you look at a lot of the kind of social commentary and hard science fiction that was being made in the 60s and 70s, Star Wars kind of threw some of that away in favor of making this kind of like child-friendly dramatic action movie in space.
Uh-huh. We only have 20 seconds, but I gather that Neil deGrasse Tyson, the celebrity scientist, doesn't like Star Wars. Are you aware of why?
You and I are going to have to fact check that. I don't know. I'd love to come back on the show and we can explore that.
I think it's because it's not science-y enough for him to really reduce it to shorthand. But Kevin Maher, see him at Kevin Geeks Out, Nighthawk Cinemas in Williamsburg, January 28th is the next one. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, may the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you, and also with you.